Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the KookCenter.com podcast. I'm here with my co-author at KookCenter.com, Craig Powers. My name is Jeff Neusser, and this is kind of a big day for me, Craig. Do you know why it's a big day for me?
I don't know why this is a big day for you.
This is a big day because this is the day when the College Basketball Prospectus book is available PDF download.
Very cool.
How exciting is that?
Very exciting.
It's really exciting for me. For those of you... go ahead.
And just so you guys know, that's a time-sensitive document. You have to get it before the season gets going.
It is.
Or otherwise it gets, you know...
Yes. It does. It will get a little dated fairly quick, but not too bad. I mean,
it'll make you smarter.
Yes.
With your friends.
Yes.
When you start predicting the early season outcomes...
Yes.
And they think here, you know, maybe you can win some prop bets off of them or something.
Yeah. For those of you who don't have any idea what College Basketball Prospectus even is, Basketball Prospectus is the basketball arm of Baseball Prospectus, kind of the whole Prospectus franchise. And they kind of take a more statistical, analytical look at sports. And obviously Baseball Prospectus kind of started the, sort of the sabermetric revolution in baseball. And they kind of have gotten other arms, including Basketball Prospectus and Football Outsiders, if you read Craig's weekly previews where he talks about the upcoming opponent and all that stuff, they're part of that as well. And so Basketball Prospectus. So sometime during the summer, John Gassaway, who edits the book, asked me to join them as one of the contributing authors. There's about, I think, 17 of us who wrote various parts of the book. And so it took me about 3 seconds to say yes, and I was – charged with writing the Mountain West Conference preview and the Western Athletic Conference preview. And so I know a lot more about the Mountain West and the WAC than I ever thought I would. Didn't do the Pac-12. The Pac-12 was actually written mostly by Kevin Pelton, who is amazing and awesome and based in Seattle. And you can always overlook the fact that he's a Husky. It's okay. He's one of the good ones. Although it turns out our fan base has a bit of an issue with that, but I suppose that's a conversation for another day. Anyway, he wrote that with a little help from Ken Pomeroy, who wrote the Colorado and Utah previews, because that's sort of in his neck of the woods. But
yeah.
I can tell you, I've read the Pac-12 preview. It's very, very good. The PDF will cost you less than $10. It's $9.95, I think, or something like that. And for 344 team previews. Every team in Division I is previewed in one way or another. The major conferences are more in depth, but the smaller conferences, every team is previewed. So it's actually a pretty cool deal, and it's actually a pretty good value for your money. If you don't like PDFs, if you like actual books, the book isn't available yet, but will be. It'll be available on Amazon.com here, I think, before too long. So pretty excited about that. That'll be, I think, I want to say about $20 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, pretty exciting stuff. I'm really proud to be a part of it, because I really value what those guys do, and the fact that they thought enough of me to come along with them, I thought was pretty humbling. So pretty excited about that. Much more excited about that than the way our football team played on Saturday. That's a segue.
Yeah. I wrote in my preview and you kind of warned us all again before the game started that it might be ugly. And I think it was uglier than I could have even have thought. You know, it was pretty clear early on that we weren't going to move the ball at all against Cal. And that was what I feared, because they're such a good pass defense team. And Marshall Lobesol had his worst games worst games of the year. Less than half his passes. And just that was kind of what, you're expecting that to come. And we were just totally ineffective, and it's a shame. It kind of, the one bright spot was probably Ricky Galvin. He had a nice game, but outside of that, it wasn't a good day.
Yeah, the Ricky Galvin stuff was actually pretty cool. The way that they tried to use him in multiple ways. That's not, that's not something they had done up until that point. Obviously, he had only gotten, most games had gotten between sort of 10 and 14 touches, I guess, you know, somewhere in there. And the fact that they had started lining him up out wide, you know, in the slot, things like that, you know, a little bit from time to time before Saturday. But Saturday was really sort of the first time when we saw them making what sort of appeared to be a concerted effort to get him the ball in space, which, you know, is kind of cool because obviously he's the type of player where being in space should be, you know, theoretically beneficial given that he's smaller and sort of shiftier and, you know, those sorts of things. But I am still, you know, terrified that one of these times he's going to take a hit and his head is going to go rolling down the field.
Sure seems. Well, the way he lowers his shoulder into the tacklers, you know, he needs to take a lesson from the Sean Alexander style of running just to go down sometimes because, you know, he sets himself up. But it is really it's really nice that he is capable of lining up in the slot and making catches out of the backfield. You know, when he's out there and making a catch, you kind of forget that he's just not another wide receiver because he's so smooth with it and he doesn't look like a running back trying to catch the ball. So it's really encouraging. You know, he's only a freshman, so it's really encouraging that we're going to have a weapon like that going forward. And hopefully as he builds, you know, some bulk, he'll be able to get more touches and become more of a you know, all-game threat rather than kind of right now he's kind of a niche guy. You know, put him in there here and there to try to create mismatches and whatnot.
Yeah, I think, you know, I want to go back and revisit, you know, what you said about Lobestal. Yeah. Obviously, that's sort of the, you know, if we weren't, I guess, ankle deep in a or knee deep or probably more accurately waist deep in coach talk, we would probably be talking more about the quarterback. You know, we'd probably be talking about, I mean, obviously we've talked about Jeff Toole and everything else, but the reality is that, you know, Lobestal has been, you know, an okay game manager at times. That's sort of what we saw against Oregon. You know, something that I, you know, wrote about where I was just sort of like, you know, this wasn't such a bad thing, this, you know, this sort of ball control offense. But when you sort of see what happens when the ball control element sort of starts to fizzle a little bit because, you know, he starts to, you know, when he starts to miss a few throws, like the whole thing sputters because you don't have any kind of big plays to make up for it. Once that completion percentage, you know, drops down around 50%, all of a sudden the offense really doesn't move the ball at all. And then you're sort of stuck. And, you know, I don't know how much of that had on Saturday had to do with the weather. You know, I mean, obviously I don't think it was raining that much in the first half, but, you know, obviously in the second half when, you know, passing sort of became paramount, you know, it really wasn't able to be effective. So I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, going forward, you know, maybe we should. It sounds like Connor Halliday is getting some reps with the ones this week. What's your feeling as to how all of that should be handled? Should they go 100%, say just turn it over to Halliday and say, you know, whatever? Should they, you know, make sure and get him ready so that if they, you know, at the first sign of trouble, they go to him for a spark, you know, kind of like, you know, down at Auburn a few years ago, you know, whatever the great Gary Rogers drive, you know, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, what's sort of your feeling about how they should handle that whole situation?
I would say that just throwing him in there for a game, probably the whole game isn't. I don't know if that's really necessary. He hasn't played. He had some snaps against UNLV and Idaho State earlier, but that's a heck of a lot different than Arizona State. And maybe try to put him in some situations where he's more likely to succeed would be a good idea. We had a few quarterbacks just get destroyed early. Like, look at Marshall Lobestal, just got destroyed early in his career, and even just, you know, tore his ACL and everything. And it's a different speed that Connor Halliday probably will has never played against before, really, that he'll see against Arizona State on Saturday. So, you know, I can't commit either way, really, because I can see why, you know, just throwing them in there is beneficial. Because what are we getting from Marshall Lobestal playing the last three games in the future? I mean, it's good for him. He's kind of earned it, if you want to say that, with his play so far this season, but as far as the team moving forward, we're going to need Connor Holiday as our backup next year. And if he's never thrown before, that doesn't make you feel very good. So I do want to see Connor play, but I don't want him to just crash and burn right off the bat. And that with a defense like Arizona State's, that's very, very likely.
Yeah, I think my feeling is he should be ready in case the game starts to get out of hand. I mean, if we get a situation where, like we had on Saturday, where Lobestall isn't playing very well, we get down by a few touchdowns. At that point, it's sort of like, do you trust Lobestall to lead us back from a 3-touchdown deficit? I sure don't. And so at that point, it's sort of like, what do you have to lose? Once it's looking like the team is not going to be able to make a bowl game with Lobestall running the show, you really should automatically, in my mind, turn it right over to Halliday. If this, especially, and I'll say this, if they lose to Arizona State, as I think most of us expect them to. I mean, obviously we're all hoping for the best, but the rational part of our brain. I mean, like I was hoping for the best against Cal, but like I said on the game thread, like you referenced, a couple minutes ago, my brain was like, this could be ugly. It really could be. I did not anticipate it being that bad, but it did not shock me when we had a difficult time, moving the ball. I really thought our defense would play better, but at this point, I don't know why I expect pretty much anything out of the defense. I'm sorry. That probably sounded really mean, but
it's true though. So
well,
true.
It is true though.
Expecting things out of the defense for probably 2 years now, and just doesn't happen.
Dude, they are ranked somewhere north of 110 out of 120 teams on both S&P Plus and FEI, which is like, it's just, I mean, I just
the
don't even know what to do with that.
The same as it ever was.
Right? Yeah. And I mean, and the thing is, and I know a lot of people will point to sort of the improved, the total yards are improved, the rushing per carrier improved, things like that. But
that's because the offense has improved. The total yards is because of the offensive improvement, not.
Yeah. I mean, look
the ball control offense we've been using the last few games is why. The defense is not going to give up as many yards if the other offense. I mean, how many possessions did Oregon have?
Exactly.
Like six or something?
Yeah. I think they ran about 13 plays to score their 43 points, no, I mean, I wrote about it in Cougar Sports Weekly this week. I wrote about how when you look at yards per play, which takes the raw aspect out of the number because – it takes away the part that, they're not rolling up the same amount of yards because the other team just isn't running as many plays. When you take that out of the equation, the yards per play on defense is as bad as it's ever been. And that freaking includes 2008 and 2009. I mean, that's like, people need to understand. I didn't just be like, they didn't really improve over last year. No, they are still giving up like 6.8 yards per play, which is what they were giving up in 2008 and 2009.
And we didn't get a play in 2008, 2009. We didn't get a play at Idaho State and UNLV and Colorado.
Yeah.
Those were teams we didn't play in 2008 and 2009.
Well, and actually that yards per play mark is just conference. I just did conference games only.
Okay.
For just sort of an apples-to-apples comparison. But in conference play, we were giving up 6.8, 6.9 yards per play in 2008 and 2009, and it's 6.8 or 6.9 again this year. It's just like I don't know. It's just the whole thing just is so – it's baffling to me that the defense is still so poor. I mean that is perhaps the most mind-boggling part of it. And the reality is when I look on the defense, I don't see a group that I'm like, just give them another year to gel because all the tools are there. I don't. I see a lot of talent at linebacker. I see Travis Long is an above average defensive end. I see Tony Pole is a potentially all conference type defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. And I see Anthony Lorenzi is a probably above average to above average defensive tackle eventually. I mean, he's probably average now. probably projects yeah. as an above average guy. And so it's like, but then I look at the defensive backfield and I go, Deion Buchanan can tackle people, but he can't cover anyone, and neither can Tyree Toomer, and our corners can't cover anybody. And I mean, I guess it's nice that
and they're all young.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it's nice that they are all within like two steps of the receivers instead of five steps of the receivers like we dealt with the last 3 years. But and I'm not trying to bang on these guys. I know that they're student athletes and I know they're working really hard, and I'm not questioning any of that. I'm just simply questioning whether the talent is at as high of a level as the coaches have tried to convince us that it is. I guess that's what I'm trying to get across. I'm not mad at these guys. I'm not trying to tell them that they suck or anything like that. I'm just trying to say I'm not sure that if they were as talented as we've been led to believe, even as young as they are, if they were as talented as we've been led to believe, that they would still be giving up like 6.8 yards per play, which is an absurdly large number. So,
I don't know. Yeah, and with the defense, you know, talked to Brian a lot about it, how it seems like the fans love to just rip on Todd Sturdy, and it's always about the play calling, which I generally don't have a huge problem with, especially when given that he designed an offense this year for a quarterback who could throw the ball down the field and kind of had to change everything, and we still had a pretty dang good offense early in the season, and teams have kind of figured us out, but when you're looking at the defense, we've had the same guy in there for 4 years, and you know, he's supposed to be the guy who has experience and everything, and we're pretty much maybe a little bit better than, but maybe we aren't, you know, maybe we aren't any better than we were on defense. Maybe just our offense holds the ball longer now, so we don't give up 70 points, we only give up 40 points now. So it's really frustrating because, you know, I don't know what it is about fans I guess the offense is easier to pick apart because the plays are easier to see. It's kind of easier to figure out what a team is doing. Basically on defense, what you're looking on TV is all you can see is that a guy's blitzing or not. You don't see what the secondary is doing or anything. But I get maybe that's why it's just easier to pick on offense than it is on defense. But, you know, I guess, you know, you have to start holding the coaches accountable when it's been 4 years and nothing has changed. And the players even are, you know, I would say they're at least bigger and they look faster, but the defense isn't any better. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, I don't want to go there too soon, but it's kind of like one of those things, like you say, where it's hard to argue like for this coaching staff anymore when there's things like that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's one of the things that I've talked about before. And I think we talked about this even on the last podcast. I can't remember for sure, but it's always hard for me to remember like what I've talked about on the podcast and what we've talked about in chats, you know, just online. But, you know, one of the things that I vividly remember is, you know, before last season when I interviewed Paul Wolf, he just went on and on about how, oh, the defense, and that's where we invested all of our time the first couple of recruiting classes because we feel like, you know, it starts on defense and all this stuff. And it's like, no, it's like 4 years later, the defense is horrible. It's as bad as it's as bad as it's ever been. And I know that's hard for people to imagine, but when you look at the metrics that strip out the raw numbers and convert them to something like what they are doing per play, the defense is as bad as it has ever been. And that says one of two things. That says either one, the talent isn't nearly as good as we've been led to believe, or two, the coaches stink. And neither one of those is good for the coaches, you know. No, it's like either they've completely misread the talent or they can't coach. And it's – I don't know, man. It's a tough deal. It's a really tough deal. And, you know, my theory about the whole Sturdy thing is pretty simple. I just think that, you know, when you look at the offense, there you feel like there's so much more that you can that somebody can do scheme wise to take advantage of things. You know, when you're talking defense, it's like, okay, well, first of all, very few people know the difference between cover three, cover two, cover one, cover zero, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, man, man cover two, zone cover two, you know, those kind of, they don't know those kinds of things. And then beyond that, you can't really see that, you know, you can't because of the way TV camera angles are, you can't see the safeties most of the time.
Yeah, so we don't get the all 22.
Right. So you don't really know what the safeties are doing. You don't really have a sense of what's really going on. And so all you're really left with as with defense as sort of a viewer with defense is to say, oh, they should blitz more or whatever. You know, I mean, it's just schematically there's not a whole lot that the casual fan can sort of pick apart and look for. But with offense, you know, you can see, are they running or are they passing?
Screen passes.
Yes. You know, people can get mad about the 85th screen pass. You know, it's like, you know, whatever. And so they feel like – and I think it basically just comes out that I think basically people just need – they feel like they need someone – to scapegoat.
Yep.
And so it's easier really to pick apart the offense and say, I'm tired of screen passes. I'm tired of this. I wish they would run more, you know, those kinds of things than it is to, you know, try and, you know, pick apart the defense. And then beyond that, people feel like our offense is super talented, you know, super, super, super talented, which I'm not sure that I buy that anymore because I'm like, I think if our receivers were as talented as we all want to believe, there would be more of them open more of the time.
Yeah.
But let's say that there are more of them open. We're just not seeing it and Lobestall is staring at guys or whatever. Let's assume, you know, for argument's sake, that's what's really going on and that we're just not utilizing the talent properly. You know, that's the other thing is, you know, if you look at the defense and you've just come to the conclusion that the defense isn't very talented, then how do you complain about that? You know, do you just scream at the television, you know, be more talented, don't suck so bad, be better. You know, I mean, it's,
and with the defense, it's hard to pinpoint because you have the defensive line who doesn't get any push.
Right.
And then you have the secondary who can't cover anyone. It's like, well, which one do you blame? And it's probably both. Like you don't have a defense that bad where you don't have one of those things doing well. If you have one of those things doing well, you're probably going to be a decent defense. If you have a good push, because most college quarterbacks do not do well with guys in their face. And, you know, with the exception of guys like Andrew Luck, who are going to be NFL quarterbacks, you just, you know, you put some pressure on a guy, he's not going to do well. Or conversely, if you have a good secondary, you know, they'll cover well, but for us, we probably don't have either right now. And, you know, it's hard for fans to blame it on what last year, you know, we were on the linebackers because it was pretty obvious, you know, how bad they were with assignments. And now this year, they're suddenly our probably strongest group. And because, you know, you don't see Deion Buchanan having to make as many tackles as he did last year. And I think that says a lot about the linebacker play. But everything else, you know, it seemed to stay at the same level. Or even the secondary play seems to maybe even regress this year. Maybe we weren't noticing it as well because guys were just getting big gains all the time anyway. And we didn't care that the secondary was giving it up or the linebackers were giving it up or anyone was giving it up. But now, you know, now people can't find someone to blame on the secondary or on the defense because everyone sucks. So on the offense, you know, blame the receivers for dropping the ball or blame the quarterback because he can't throw or, you know, blame the offensive line because they can't block. It's a lot easier. So I think that offense is just easier to parse out, like figure out. Quarterback's getting sacked. Offensive line sucks. That's what people say, you know, even though sometimes or a lot of times it's the quarterback's fault. But you know, it's offense, like you said, and well, I guess we can end this, but it's just easier to pick apart. Like, it's just way easier, and even though it's our defense, by no means is our offense even average this year, but, you know, you watch a telecast, and they would say that we're this high-flying pass offense, but we're not even average with Lobestall at quarterback. We're not even average, and our defense is just awful. And so, but it's always the offense that gets the ire, and there's a lot of reasons for it, but We can move on to basketball, I think.
Yeah, I think that might not be a bad idea. I mean, we're both basically in agreement, right? That Saturday is going to be very, very, very difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Like I was talking to you before the podcast, you know, Arizona State, just like Cal, they're strongest in pass defense, and they're good on standard downs and you know all of that stuff that we need to be good. You know, we need standard down performance. We have to get yards on first and second down. If we don't get yards on first and second down, we are screwed. Like, because Lobastal can't make those downfield throws. And, you know, maybe Holiday can, but he's not, from reports I've heard, he's not accurate. He is not quite, you know, attuned at reading defenses. And that you can see, you know, with Arizona State's, pretty good getting pressure on the quarterback. So, you know, it's going to be another long day on the offensive side of the ball. And Arizona State's offense is very good too. That's why they're a good team. And it's, you know, the dads in attendance who get to see their one game probably don't get to see a very good one. You know, we got homecoming this year is Stanford, so we get pummeled on that. And then I don't have high hopes for Arizona State with Dad's Weekend either. I'm hoping we only score more than 10 points. Like I legitimately fear that we won't. I've probably lost all bit of optimism for this team at this point now. So maybe I'm just being a curmudgeon or something.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm typically, obviously, you know, you and I are sort of the, you know, kindred spirits in terms of the analytical way of looking at the games and everything. But, you know, I mean, I think obviously we both understand that this game is played by actual human beings.
Yes.
Who have actual emotions and actual life problems. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I say I wouldn't, you know, I have never, ever, ever put a penny of my own money gambling on college sports. I have gambled a little bit on professional sports at times when I've been in Vegas, but like college sports is like just like my rule of thumb. No way, no how, never, 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 never. Because I remember what I was like when I was 19, 20, 21 years old. I remember how a bad day with my girlfriend would, you know, ruin my week, you know, and I couldn't focus on anything, you know, let alone trying to be a peak performing athlete. You know, so and you know, it makes somewhat of this stuff, you know, when Paul Wolf talks about, you know, sometimes players just don't bring it. I do understand that that happens. Yeah. It's just a matter of, you know, and I don't want to get into a big tangent here, but it's like, you know, it's a matter of, okay, in a vacuum, yes, we can all be understanding about that. In the context of the last 3.5 years, it starts to sort of be like, you know, but my point is that, you know, Arizona State being college kids, just like everybody else, you know, I mean, they're coming up here and, you know, the weather's going to be really cold, like super cold.
Yeah.
Not quite freezing, but close
to it. It's going to be 7:30 at night.
Yeah. It'll be 7:30 at night. It'll be 40 ish, you know, potentially even in the 30s. There may be rain, and that'll be like the coldest freaking rain of the coldest rain ever, you know, and Arizona State, you know, is sort of coming off this UCLA loss, which who knows if they're going to be inspired or depressed at the fact that they lost that game and now they have to come all the way to Pullman, which it really wouldn't surprise me if it was actually the latter. If we were going to Tempe, I'd be much more concerned about just getting steamrolled by a pissed off team. But now it's like, I think there's some potential for some wallowing. And I know all of this is sort of speculation, not even sort of. All of this is outright speculation. I know. I try to qualify it by saying sort of, and there's like nothing sort of about it. It's just ridiculous outright speculation. But the reality is that there are sort of factors that you could say maybe might make them play, at a lower level than what they're potentially capable of. And so, so for that, I guess I kind of have a little bit of hope. I don't know, like, what – you know, I don't know what the big deal is as far as, you know, whether they've actually got a shot, but, you know, who knows? I mean, I guess that's something to think about. Anyway, how about let's talk about basketball? Something much happier. Not happier. we're going to apparently be missing 40% of our starting lineup against Gonzaga and our top reserve off the bench. Yay for injuries. In case you haven't seen yet tonight, Reggie Moore is probably going to be out. Abe Lodwick is probably going to be out. And Faisal Aiden is probably going to be out. Now, Faisal Aiden does not bother me all that much. My feelings about Faisal Aiden are well documented pretty much all over the site. So don't need to really go into that here. But mostly my feeling there is we have enough guards that, and there's enough depth there that we can probably get by without another shooting guard, you know. Yeah. But our lead ball handler, not so much. And
have a freshman out there.
Have a freshman out there.
And in the kennel.
Yeah, splitting point guard duties with Marcus Capers. So Devontae Lace.
Yeah, that's true.
Capers, splitting point guard duties, which is like terrible.
And I've seen Marcus Capers bring the ball up enough in my life in the last 3 years. I don't need to see it that much anymore.
He did a decent job last year bringing it up. Didn't turn the ball over much, bring it up. But that's the problem is he can't do anything else. You know, he's not putting it on the floor. He's not driving to the basket and finding an open shooter. He's not doing any of the other things that Reggie Moore would be doing. And so
we're playing 4-on-5 because the only thing he does is crash the offensive glass.
Yep.
It's the only thing he does. For him to be like a plus player, he has to have a stellar rebounding and defensive game.
Yeah.
But you have to have him in there because we don't have any ball handlers now that Reggie's out, which is against probably maybe the best team on our schedule.
Well, the best team in the non-conference schedule, probably.
Maybe who's better in conference? Washington, well, I think, maybe?
Yeah, UCLA. I mean, I think Cal, UCLA, or Washington, I think any of those could be better than Gonzaga. I personally always have a probably unhealthy skepticism of Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Just because.
Which is fair.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think Mark Few's a jerk, and that's probably not a nice thing to say either, but I just feel like they get far too much attention for far too little tangible accomplishment other than dominating a league for, you know, however many years. We'll see how long that continues to last, by the way, now that they have to play BYU twice a year.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see how that goes down, considering Mark Few didn't want anybody challenging his seat of supremacy by keeping out Seattle University, which I still think is one of the chumpest moves ever. But anyway, total tangent. I think certainly it's the toughest team on the non-conference schedule. New Mexico, if we end up playing New Mexico, New Mexico could be up there with Gonzaga. They could challenge. That's a really good team, depending on how much – which, of course, I would know since I previewed the Mountain Conference.
I think we have to win two games in that.
If we win our first game and they win their first game, we would win the second round. So, yeah, and it's not totally unlikely that we would win that first game. So, but anyway, yeah. So, obviously a very tall order anyway to be able to beat Gonzaga up there at the Kennel, considering their strength in the front line and our, you know, sort of mega weakness up there. Now it's sort of looking like a very, 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 very long shot, I guess. So I don't know. My personal feeling is all these guys, if they're hurt and there's any chance – like Faisal, I'm not so worried about because his is a concussion. And it's not that I'm not worried about concussions, but I'm not worried about it being something that lingers all year. With Reggie, with what happened last year with the hand, I would just rather if he's sort of, you know, not right, hold him out, you know, and let him get right sometime in December when it's all healed up and not, you know, I really dread that he's going to be stuck with another injury sort of all year, you know, nagging thing all year long. So.
Yeah. And with Reggie, you know, that's, that wrist thing is a thing he's had for a while, and just we don't want him to have another injury that nags him for entire. I mean, he was just not the same player last year. He wasn't that drive to the basket player. He wasn't aggressive. We were lucky enough to have Clay be so great last year and carry us as much as he did, and because Reggie really wasn't the same player, and I fear that this could turn into the same thing again, and he's hurt again for the second straight season, and this is a season that we really, really need him to play well, play like when he was a freshman. And I agree with you. This Gonzaga game, if we were at full strength, that's a big if for us to win. You know, Ken Pomeroy has it at 16%. So, if we can have, I'd rather have him in there so win the games we're supposed to win and then ready to in conference play, because I know that you're going to love to hear this, Jeff, but the schedule in conference play really sets up for a fast start.
Ooh, the fast start. The fast start. Yeah.
I've been sitting on that one.
Yeah, well done.
But we do really have – we have the Oregon schools at home and then Utah and Colorado, which is probably the easiest road trip in the conference.
Yep.
After that. So, those are four games that we can win before we go play at UW, which will be tough.
Yeah. And the reality is, I mean, I'm just going to be honest. This Gonzaga game really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. And I know that that's not probably what most people are thinking. Everybody wants to beat Gonzaga and whatever. But, in sort of the grand scheme of things with where this team is trying to go, it's just not that important of a game, really. It's if this team was really predicted to be fighting potentially for a NCAA tournament berth, then I'd say, yeah, absolutely. Really big deal, really big game. It's sort of our one chance to win a game in the non-conference schedule against like what could be a very marquee opponent, because we're playing that first game, by the way, down in California is against Oklahoma, and so we're playing Oklahoma. They're okay. They're a middling to below average Big 12 team. And then, like I said, New Mexico is probably going to be pretty good, but they certainly don't carry the, name cachet that, some other teams might, that sort of thing. So I just, whatever. The Gonzaga game, just in the grand scheme of things, not that important. It's sort of more important that this team, I think, is ready to go come Pac-12 time. Mm-hmm. And that, they can sort of make a push for the middle of the conference and maybe get back in the NIT. I mean, I think that's unlikely, but I think that should more be the goal, given that, I think we all can agree this team probably doesn't possess the all-around talent to make a real serious push at the NCAA tournament.
No. Although I saw – this is off top, but I don't know how I came across it, but the Rushler Court, they have a Pac-12 like specific sort of area now that I think that on one of the guys from Building the Dam is now editing. They had our best case scenario is winning 21 games and 10 conference games, and they had us in the NIT in that situation, which I thought was really interesting.
Huh.
I don't know how many Pac-10 teams win 10 conference games, or Pac-12 teams win 10 conference games and go to the NIT, but I don't think it's ever happened. So I thought that was interesting, but if we won 10 conference games, I'd be ecstatic.
Ecstatic would not even sort of describe the emotion that I'd be feeling. 10 conference wins, that would be like, I would be very, 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 very excited if that happened. I think that's, I don't know. I don't see how that would happen, but, maybe, I don't know. Maybe Reggie Moore gets healthy and he's really that good. I don't know.
We got a lot of toss-ups in the conference schedule. So
that is
we
true.
Have to basically win every single toss-up game.
All of the toss-ups, yeah.
Which is what we pretty much, you know, you think in 06, that's 06, 07, that's what we did in that turnaround year. That's what they did. They won every single toss-up game. And then, you know, that's how you have those, like, crazy good seasons that you don't expect. You know, so you never know. I'd like to have a little optimism again, you know, even though we're, you know, Clay and D'Angelo are gone and our point guard's hurt again and, you know, we're super young and don't have – and Brock Modem can't rebound and, you know, I try my best to, you know, after football – at least football took a little bit longer to break my spirit this year. You know, we had those early season 3-1 start, had us excited, so that kind of carried us through, and now we've lost 5 games in a row, and it's we're pretty much sitting almost the same situation. I think we were 0-6 last year, and then now we're 1-5 in conference. So, thank you for inviting Colorado, Larry Scott.
I know, you know, and thank God for Colorado, because all of a sudden we're no longer the laughing stock of the conference, even though,
you know, every week Ted Miller has his rankings and we're always 11th.
Yes, as long as we've got Colorado.
We're spot worse than we were last year.
yeah, whatever, Negacoog. If you want to look at the negative side of it, then you certainly can. No, it is kind of nice to no longer be the laughing stock of the conference, but it's
basketball,
sort of,
we certainly aren't that.
No,
we have been, but we are no longer that. We're at least contending for the middle every year.
Yes, and if this season does go completely sideways, I mean, I'm going to be honest. If Reggie Moore is out for any definite, you know, length of time, you know, this team really could be really, really bad. But the reality is, and I would say this, that Utah is going to be horrible, like beyond horrible. And so, you know, where we're thankful for Colorado in football, we'll probably be that kind of thankful for Utah in basketball, because they're not going to be good. So it's going to be kind of like, hey, welcome to the Pac-12, guys. And thanks, Larry Scott, I'd like to personally thank you for having these other teams. The only bummer is that we don't play Colorado and Utah twice.
Yeah, we only
play them the one time, which any school that plays them twice is going to be at a bit of an advantage in terms of the conference race. So, and I have not looked to see who those people are, but
that's the unbalanced schedule world we live in now.
Yep.
You know, it's good to have the money, but it is kind of sad to see that, you know, that round robin go away.
Yeah.
But I'll take the $20 million.
Well, and I'm just tickled that it's basketball season.
Yes. So
I've got Arizona Valpo sitting on my DVR to try and watch tonight. And I'm just unbelievably excited for Friday. Friday is sort of the official kickoff of the season. Mm-hmm. There's the North Carolina Michigan State game on the aircraft carrier in San Diego, which is going to be like one of the coolest things ever, I think.
I love how North Carolina and Michigan State are playing on an aircraft carrier in San Diego.
Yeah. So, you know, and they're going to be playing outdoors, and so I'm sort of fascinated by the whole outdoor basketball thing, and it should be really cool, and I'm just super excited because I love basketball. I mean, those of you who have been around the site for a long time know that, you know, I do write about football, but basketball is far and away my first love, and I enjoy watching it more than I enjoy watching football, even though I love football, but I'm a hoops junkie. I love playing it. I love everything about basketball. And so,
and I will say that usually Jeff and myself and Grady, at least, I think we do our better writing in basketball than we do in football.
Yeah.
I feel sometimes like a lost puppy in football.
Yeah. And I know that's for sure true about me. You know, I was actually thinking a lot about that this week, oddly enough. And, you know, I sort of – I sort of have a hard time with football because I've learned a lot about football over the last couple of years, you know, just sort of paying closer attention and, you know, reading sites like Chris Brown's smartfootball.com. If you guys don't read Smart Football, you should. It's just, you know, he talks about schemes and things like that, and specific kinds of plays. And it's just, it's sort of an invaluable resource. But what I've learned is that, you know, it's sort of like the more I know, the more I realize I don't know stuff. And it was a lot easier to just sort of be ignorant and be like, oh, yeah, the quarterback, he blows. Well, now that I know sort of all the stuff that goes into quarterbacking and reading of coverages and setting up protection packages and things like that, it's like now I watch a game and I go, you know, I really have no idea what the F just happened there. Yeah. Because it looks like this, but I really have no idea if it really was that. And to me, that sort of makes it kind of difficult because I'm like, you know, without knowing, all of a sudden now I go, well, geez, unless I can see the safeties, I really don't know what happened.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, and so it just sort of it's been a little bit frustrating for me because I'm like, you know, the more I know, the more I realize I don't know. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of a not good place really for me to be as a writer because I kind of like to sort of know what I'm talking about if I'm going to talk, you know, authoritatively about things. But basketball, on the other hand, I can actually see all 10 guys all at the same time, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
And I think that the there's more numbers, and I think they're more accessible than football, you know, analytic data. So I'm actually I guess that's one of the things that drew me there. And then I get to do cool things like write for College Basketball Prospectus. So
yes,
that's pretty nifty. So.
Yeah, if and for the listeners, if you want to feel really dumb about football, just get on Twitter, follow guys like Doug Farrar, Bill Barnwell, and Smart Football, and you just follow them on Sunday, and just figure out that you don't know anything about anything.
Yep, and Bill Connolly is a good one.
Yeah, Bill Connolly. Yeah,
I think he's
a college football guy.
Yep, college football guy for SB Nation.
If anyone reads my writing, they'll know who Bill Connolly is because I pretty much mention him every week.
Yep, no doubt about that. So, yep. So anyway, well, I think that's a good place for us to wrap up. What do you think?
Definitely, yeah. Go basketball.
Yeah, go basketball. All right, well, hey, that's the end of the Cook Center podcast. For Craig Powers, my name is Jeff Neuser. Once again, if you love college basketball and want to be a smarter fan, go pick up the College Basketball Prospectus. The link is at my website, at our website, at CookCenter.com. And you can also get either the PDF or you can get the hard copy a little bit later from Amazon.com. And you can also find my work at CougarSportsWeekly.com, subscription newsletter. Feel free to check that out too. I would love your support on that. So thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate it. Have an awesome night or day or whenever it is that you're listening to this.